It is a common duty of humanity to spread accurate information about the until now unsuspected and terrific amount of human suffering.
I'm Katie Ailes, and you're listening to Building Stories, a new podcast from Edinburgh City of Literature and Historic Environment Scotland. This series celebrates five female writers who lived at various points in their lives in Edinburgh and vitally contributed to literary culture across Scotland, the UK, and the world. The important work of these women has gone under-recognized, so in this podcast we shine a light on their achievements. All of the authors featured in these podcasts were nominated to be recognized by Historic Environment Scotland's commemorative plaque scheme. Plaques for Rebecca West, Mary Brunton, and Christian Isabel Johnston were installed in spring 2022. This episode remembers the prolific 19th century writer Christian Isabel Johnston, whose wide-ranging literary accomplishments included penning historical novels, editing magazines, conducting harrowing investigative journalism, and even writing a cookbook. Revered by Thomas Carlyle as the brave-hearted lady, Johnston was a true Renaissance woman in Edinburgh's literary scene, who used her considerable skills not only to entertain and to educate, but also to advocate for political and social reform. Very little is known about Christian's early life. Historians guess that she was born in Edinburgh in 1781, but this isn't confirmed. We do know that at age 16 she married an Edinburgh printer, but that 8 years later the couple separated. The circumstances of this marriage have been lost to history. At age 34, in the spring of 1815, Christian married John Johnston, another Edinburgh printer, as well as a former schoolteacher. John would become not only her partner in life, but also in work. Over the course of their 40-plus year marriage, they collaborated on many major periodicals and shaped the face of Edinburgh's news media in the mid-1800s. In 1817, just 2 years into their marriage, Christian and John co-founded the Inverness Courier. They ran the paper successfully until they moved back down south in 1824, returning to Edinburgh, where they were to remain for the rest of their lives. In the capital city, this publishing power couple pioneered multiple periodicals. Together, they edited the Edinburgh Weekly Chronicle and the Schoolmaster Weekly magazine, and in 1832, they launched Johnston's Edinburgh Magazine. One of the catalysts for this new magazine was the 1832 Reform Bill, which passed Parliament after massive public pressure and enacted some modest voting reforms. For example, it extended voting rights to men who owned property worth at least £10. Now, the Johnstons were a politically radical pair. We know that Christian was strongly anti-slavery, advocated on behalf of the poor, and believed in extending enfranchisement. The couple saw the Reform Bill as frustratingly limited. The property requirement meant that the majority of working-class people still couldn't vote, and of course women were cut out entirely. Recognizing that Parliament wouldn't act directly, the Johnstons took it upon themselves to effect change. Christian and John recognized that a key vehicle for empowering people was informing them, and that this could only happen when reliable information was widely accessible. So, Johnston's Edinburgh Magazine was designed for, quote, the cheap and universal diffusion of really useful information of every kind. The Johnstons priced their magazine very affordably. However, this noble commitment to accessibility would sadly also be the paper's downfall. Although it circulated to over 5,000 readers monthly, the cheap price meant the Johnstons were operating at a loss. Luckily, in 1834, they merged with Tate's magazine, which shared their radical ideals. Christian was not only a major contributor to this new iteration of Tate's, but also took on management of its entire literary section. It is for this that she is recognized today as the first woman to serve as a paid editor of a major Victorian periodical. When Christian Isabel Johnston wasn't editing or writing for these magazines, she also wrote long-form nonfiction. Her range was remarkable. She wrote books on subjects as diverse as beehives, parenting, the voyages of Sir Francis Drake, and even a cookbook. The Cook and Housewife's Manual, published in 1826, contains not only recipes, but also commentary on the cultural origins of these dishes, sparkling with perhaps tongue-in-cheek wit.
With this belief, we hold as maxims that the French take the lead of all European people in soups and broth, that the Scotch rank second, the Welsh next, and that the English as a nation, though with many honourable exceptions, are at the very bottom of the scale.
Interestingly, Johnston published the cookbook under a pseudonym, Margaret Dodds. In what we can perceive to be an early version of fan fiction, Johnston was actually extending the fictional universe crafted by another major Scottish author, Walter Scott. Margaret Dodds is a character in Scott's novel St. Ronan's Well, a shrewd inn hostess and chef. Walter Scott himself wrote the introduction to Johnston's cookbook and alluded to it in his other published work, effectively acknowledging Johnston's cookbook as part of the Walter Scott extended universe. Remarkably, it wasn't until the 1840s, when Christian was in her 60s, that she began publishing her long-form work under her actual name. Like many other female writers of that era, she wrote chiefly under a pseudonym or simply published anonymously. Christian Isabel Johnston's strong political ideals shot through her nonfiction as well as her work in magazines and newspapers. In the early 1830s, she embarked on a major investigative journalism project to bring public awareness to the horrific poverty in Ireland at the time. 1836's True Tales of the Irish Peasantry, as related by themselves, presents itself as a collection of verbatim accounts given by Irish peasants to the Poor Law Commission. Although some scholars have speculated that this is a fictional premise, that Johnston wrote the accounts herself, the poverty described through these accounts was very real, and the book brought much-needed attention to the awful situation facing many Irish people in the early 1800s. The xenophobia against and scapegoating of the Irish poor that Johnston describes in her introduction to the book unfortunately echoes in our world politics today.
Until the starving labourers and their families came over in such shoals as threatened to make the little lean morsel of our own poor leaner and less, there certainly existed a very kindly feeling towards the Irish over all of Scotland. The jealousy of trading competition and poverty, which, however, was comparative wealth to Irish poverty, have long since blunted our sympathies with the distress of our fellow subjects and neighbours. We naturally felt for our own poor in the first place, but much less justifiably looked with scowling eyes upon the wretched Irish, whom we would neither welcome to share with us, nor yet, which had been far better for both, aid in improving their own condition. If home had been made barely tolerable for the Irish poor, both islands would have been reaping the advantage by now.
Between her journalistic commitments and her non-fiction writing, Christian also devoted her literary talents to penning short and long-form fiction. Her most famous novel is Clan Alban, a national tale, published in 1815, the same year as the Battle of Waterloo, and 1 year following the publication of Walter Scott's famous novel, Waverley. Clanalbin tells the tale of Norman MacAlbin, a poor orphan raised in the Highlands whose army service takes him on adventures across Europe. This novel furthered the tradition of the national tale, but it wasn't nationalistic, at least not in the jingoist, flag-waving, blood-and-birth way that we often perceive nationalism today. As critic Andrew Monnickendam has written, the novel suggests that one can take pride in one's language, culture, country, but, taken to extremes, national prejudice leads to war. And war, the novel emphasizes, is an evil never to be celebrated. Clanalbin ends happily with the marriage of a couple who together share heritage from Scotland, Ireland, India, France, and Spain, a positive image of cross-cultural connection remarkable in the time it was published. Plus, although Clanalbin mourns the loss of Highlands culture, blaming the clearances squarely on the aristocracy, it avoids romanticizing and idealizing the Highlands as Scott's novel Waverley arguably did. Although today Waverley is hugely celebrated and studied, scholars have pointed out that Johnston's novel from the following year actually gives the more nuanced, sophisticated take on Scottish national identity. Still, today Clanalbin has waned nearly into obscurity, while Waverley's star shines bright. Christian Isabel Johnston's writing reveals not only a drive to improve conditions for the poor and enslaved, but also for women. Her career is a strong testament to women's roles in the media, and proto-feminist themes run through her writing. For instance, although the protagonist of Clanalbin is male, it's the female characters who steal the scenes. Johnston is very clear in the novel that it is the women in Norman MacAlbin's life that make any success he finds possible.
Woman was indeed the tutelary genius of Norman's wayward fate. Her kindness had preserved his feeble existence, fostered his infancy, and tended his childhood. She had been his earliest and almost his only friend, and from her lip of love he had imbibed those lessons which would have told him to drain his dearest veins in protecting the meanest of a sex so sacred. In every felicitous occurrence of his life, Norman could trace the agency of woman, and through so endeared a medium every blessing came to him twice blessed.
In an age where women often took care of the domestic tasks allowing men to achieve greatness, Johnston bluntly reminded her readers that the credit for this greatness must be shared with the women who made it possible. Christian Isabel Johnston died on 26th August, 1857, at the age of 76. The Register of Deaths in that year recorded her simply as, quote, the wife of a gentleman. Her husband followed her in November, and the couple were buried in the Grange Cemetery. While Edinburgh alone has a colossal monument, multiple statues, and an entire train station devoted to Walter Scott, until now there has been no public memorial to the woman whose prestigious career rivaled his. In spring 2022, Historic Environment Scotland took a step towards remedying this by installing a plaque commemorating Christian Isabel Johnston at 12 Buccleuch Place, where she died. This plaque will serve as a reminder of her vital contributions not only to Edinburgh's literary landscape, but also to its social, political, and cultural fabric. That's all for this episode of Building Stories. For more episodes and to learn more about the ongoing effort to make historically significant women more visible in Edinburgh, please visit www.cityofliterature.com. This podcast is produced by I Am Loud Productions. It was commissioned by Edinburgh City of Literature and Historic Environment Scotland. Thank you so much for listening.